So indeed, my talk is incredibly related to the one we have just heard, but in a way, I will zoom in on a subclass of a subclass of a subclass of the quantifiers that Gennaro talked about, and I will also show how you can concretely have this program of explaining a number of quite puzzling distributional facts, simply from assuming that we have some kind of a logic engine in our mind and that we don't like contradictions. And I think the significance of this for cognitive science is important, right? So I'd like to start with a few truisms, which is that when you look at the approaches to meaning in neural networks work, which I don't know much about, words, phrases, sentences are represented as vectors, which are derived from Cochrane's patterns in some input. And we know that some properties of lexical meaning in particular, and even more, are captured in these representations. For instance, we heard about semantic similarity in the previous talk. And then for formal semantics, the picture looks incredibly different. The idea, which is very classical, is that the meaning of words, phrases, and sentences is characterized in terms of truth conditions, and in particular that words, and lexical words in particular, are used to refer to things which are outside of language, and that linguistic expressions have content in this sense, right? So the core primitives of formal semantics are things like truth conditions, entailment, and so on, right? And the two seem incredibly dissimilar, but to continue with truisms, I mean, there is also an obvious relation between, the two perspectives, right? Which is that, from the point of view of sort of the classical formal semantics view, what we would say is this, and this is going to be a set of truisms, but worth articulating, I think, words are used to express thoughts about the world. One is more likely to think about a kitchen and food more or less at the same time than to think of a kitchen and an airplane more or less at the same time. So the words kitchen and food will co-occur more often in a single paragraph than the words kitchen and airplane. So it's sort of obvious that from this very classical perspective, we expect that meaning will leave a signature in the distributional data. And of course, that some aspects of the meaning of words, phrases, sentences, and so on can be inferred from their Cochrane's pattern. And it's also very clear that this plays an actual role in learning the meaning of words, as we heard, for instance, in Anne's talk, right? But one thing I want is still a truism, that from the explanatory point of view, if you want to understand why the distributional data look like what they are, it seems sort of obvious that meaning viewed as content is going to play a central explanatory role in explaining what we see, right? So there is, of course, the question, how much semantics do neural networks know? And it's not a question I will even try to answer. But in a sense, I think what I'm going to say, and also the previous talk, is that maybe it can raise some desiderata for these systems, a little bit like we've seen in the domain of syntax, where the same thing happens, right? So today, I will focus on a very specific case where a combination of hypotheses about the meaning and the sense of content and logic will explain some relatively intricate distributional syntactic patterns in a parsimonious way. In fact, I will mostly talk and nearly only talk about one item, right? Because I want to do a case study and to run you through the whole thing, right? I will argue from this that semantic theorizing is needed to provide an explanatory account of the distributional data, that our linguistic competence includes a kind of logic engine. And the important thing here for me is that the proposed account requires a symbolic approach to linguistic competence, which, as I said, raises certain desiderata for non-symbolic artificial intelligence as a model for linguistic competence. So the case study will be about complex disjunctions, specifically in French, like soit-soit or ou-ou. In fact, you find those in many, many, many different languages, in various language families. And from everything from all the data I gathered, they work in the same way, except with the mysterious exception of English either or, actually. But or in Italian, as far as I can tell, is the same, Turkish, Hebrew, and a number of languages, right? So observations, right? One is that soit-soit, something like Samira a appris soit l'allemand, soit l'anglais, she learned either German or English, favors an exclusive reading, that is, a reading which excludes that she did both. And the fact about distribution is that soit-soit, so this complex disjunction, it doesn't like to occur in a negative context. So that's a polarity-sensitive item in this sense. It's a positive polarity item. So, here is some context. To become a Canadian citizen, one needs to speak an official language of Canada. And if I tell you Paul ne parle pas soit français, soit anglais, I'll show you quantitative data about that, but that should feel quite bad. I mean, it's a very unnatural sentence. With OO it improved. It's actually not perfect for many speakers because they would prefer possibly the ni-ni construction. And even if I put the negation further away, je ne pense pas que parle pas soit anglais soit français, there is still a sense that it's degraded. I put two question marks there. You'll see quantitative data that match, these diacritics. If you put the plain disjunction OO here, so literally, I don't think that Paul speaks English or French. This is just a perfect sentence, right? So that's just, so there are these two facts. There is a fact about interpretation. Soit favors an exclusive construal. And there is a fact about distribution. It doesn't like negation so much, right? What I'll claim is that this distribution can be explained by an abstract condition of a logical nature. And in terms of independently observed fact about the interpretation of this complex disjunction. So General talked about polarity items, so very briefly, these are items which are allergic to a certain environment, where the relevant environments are typically characterized in semantic terms and something like negative and positive, and we'll see exactly what that means. And there are a number of attempts, and General already mentioned them, to explain these allergies in terms of general principles, like, for instance, avoid contradictions. The case of any is well known. It wants to be in a negative environment. One thing I want to point out, that when we say negative here, it doesn't mean there is a syntactic negation, right? So you have this contrast between a few and few, right? And the point is that few is negative in a semantic sense, whether a few isn't, right? And there's something to keep in mind, right? So positive polarity items, this is what I'm going to talk about. So just, to give you sort of a quick overview. So, these items are allergic to negation, so you can say something like Adam is somewhat angry, but Adam is not somewhat angry is somewhat odd, except in very specific contexts, which I'll come to, right? Miriam has already been to the US, it's fine. Miriam has not already been to the US, is not that good. So these expressions are positive polarity items. Yeah, the exception that I want to, just for you to bear in mind, that you will find such sentences in corpora for various reasons, but one is that there are these echoic contexts where you are directly negating something, denying something that was said. So, the following dialogue is completely fine. She has already been to the US. No, she hasn't already been to the US. That's completely fine, right? So these are what I call here the echoic contexts, which I will put aside. Now, another thing that is incredibly important is that the allergy is semantic in nature. Namely, it's really about interpretation, not about the string itself, right? So if you take the French sentence, le professeur n'a pas écouté certains étudiants, that's a fine sentence, actually. Or the teacher didn't listen to some students, so certains and some are positive polarity items. But the thing is that what it typically means outside of the echoic context that I've discussed is not the negation of the teacher listened to some student, which would mean that the teacher listened to no student. In the proper context, you could use this to mean there are some students who the teacher didn't listen to, which is a very different reading where the indefinite takes scope of a negation. So, I could say something like that in French. Le professeur n'a pas écouté certains des étudiants, mais il en a quand même écouté quelques-uns. Or the teacher didn't listen to some of the students, but still he did listen to a few. That's completely coherent, right? So the last thing I want to mention briefly, because it's not so interesting here, but it's for the sake of giving you sort of a complex picture, is that among those items, some of them have what I call here a long-distance allergy. That is, even when the negation is relatively far away from the item, you get degradation, right? So, je ne pense pas que Myriam soit un peu énervée, slightly degraded. Or in English, I don't think that Mary is somewhat angry. But with already, it's completely fine, right? So I don't think that Miriam has already been to New York. It's just a completely fine sentence. I'll show you some data from a survey that supports this for at least the item I'm interested in. Now, and this is going to be very important, that these items, when I said that they want to be in a negative context, it's really a semantic notion. So you can ask, what happens if I put two negations? So if I put two negations, I create a non-negative context. And the expectation then is that these items are going to be fine if you put two negations, right? And so we have that kind of contrast. Although she has traveled a lot, Miriam hasn't already been to the US, which is somewhat degraded. It's not horrible, but it's somewhat degraded. Compared to, she has traveled so much that I can't believe that Miriam hasn't already been to the US. which is, you know, from the few English speakers that I ask from, is a completely fine sentence, right? With somewhat, it's going to be even more striking, despite what happened, Adam is not somewhat angry, you know, pretty degraded. Given what happened, it's impossible for Adam not to be somewhat angry, which is actually very good. That's the judgment I got informally. When we talk about disjunction, the only thing I want to point out is that OO itself, the plain disjunction, is sometimes described as a positive polarity item because, in fact, under a negation in the same clause, it's not so good, right? So as an answer to who will Samira invite tomorrow, something like, en tout cas, elle n'invitera pas Ada ou Fabio, so in any case, she will not invite Ada or Fabio, is judged, and I'll show you data, slightly degraded. People, probably because people prefer to say Nini, right? But one thing that is clear, that it's very good if you put the negation a bit further, je ne pense pas qu'elle invitera Ada ou Fabio. The interesting thing, that even here, this you do get this rescuing thing with double negation, right? So this is data I have that I will not present. People systematically prefer 14 to 13A. So, il est impossible qu'elle n'invite pas Ada ou Fabio is judged much better than elle n'invitera pas Ada ou Fabio. So, we still see this effect of double negation. I want to point out this actually shows that the phenomenon you see here for those speakers for whom it's degraded, it cannot be just due to the competition with the Nini form. Because the Nini form would be completely possible here. I could also say, il est impossible qu'elle n'invite ni Ada ni Fabio. It is impossible that she will invite neither Ada nor Fabio. But that's a side issue. So the point I'm interested in is that in the case of Swa-Swa, and in fact a whole class of item, the allergy is global. That is, you know, the negation or the negative element can be as far as you want, basically. And, you know, this is still degraded. Je ne pense pas qu'elle invitera soit Ada, soit Fabio. Compared especially to the disjunction. So what I will show you soon is, you know, our systematic contrast, right? So that's a contrast. I don't think she'll invite complex disjunction Ada or Fabio, and I don't think she'll invite Ada or Fabio plain disjunction. And the feeling of degradation is generally much stronger with Swa-Swa than with OO, even with the closed negation. So here are just some basic data. This is just a questionnaire where a few subjects, so all the sentence types that I'm going to talk about, lexicalized in various ways. So when you have no negation, both disjunctions are completely fine. When you have a closed negation, the same clause, they are both degraded, but more so for the complex disjunction. And when you have a distant negation, like in the frame, I don't think that, the plain negation becomes completely fine, and swa-swa still is degraded, right? Okay, so this is the data I got. You do get this phenomenon of rescuing with double negation. Il est impossible qu'elle n'invite pas soit Ada, soit Fabio. Is judged much better. Or, je ne connais personne qui n'ait pas étudié soit l'anglais, soit l'espagnol. Is judged much better than je connais quelqu'un qui n'a pas étudié soit l'anglais, soit l'espagnol. So, I'm actually realizing I'm not translating, but you have the glosses, and I hope this suffices, but I'm... Yeah, I will assume that it suffices. So, I mean, the first one is, it's impossible that she will not invite Ada or Fabio complex disjunction. The second one is, I don't know anyone who hasn't studied either English or Spanish. And both are good, and if you remove the negative element, so personne, for instance, with its positive counterpart, like quelqu'un, someone, it becomes, you know, seriously degraded, right? So, it looks like there is a logical condition, a semantic condition, which is that this item, this complex disjunction, wants to be in a semantically non-negative environment. And importantly, and we have already seen that, it's not the presence or absence of an actual negation that matters. In fact, sometimes you want a negation because the verb is itself negative, right? So for instance, on this I don't have data, this is introspective judgment. What matters is the presence. So j'exclus de voter soit pour Poutou, soit pour Mélenchon, is for me, you know, significantly more degraded than, so I exclude to vote soit for Poutou, soit for Mélenchon. That's for me much more degraded than je n'exclus pas de voter soit pour Poutou, soit pour Mélenchon. I don't exclude to vote soit pour Poutou, soit pour Mélenchon. The point I want to make here is that, you know, on the surface, because this might raise a challenge, you know, for neural networks and so on, because what we have, I mean, it's the negative sentence now that it's fine, if I'm correct about the data. And the reason it's fine, of course, is because the verb itself, exclude, is negative in a semantic sense. And so it's like it's as if we had two negations, right? But on the surface, we have sort of the opposite of what we saw with the verb penser, think, right? Okay, what does it mean to be negative? Since it's not, it cannot be a morphosyntactic notion, we need some kind of logical definition of what it means to be negative, right? So what I'm doing here, we heard the word monotonicity previously, and it's really the same thing, but I'm using here a different terminology. Negation has one, you know, property, which is that it satisfies contraposition, meaning it is entailment reversing, right? So if phi entails psi, then not psi entails not psi, right? Not phi. Now, the important thing that negation is not the only thing that does that, right? So this illustrates in a concrete case, right? So Sue lives in Paris entails Sue lives in France, given what we know about Paris and France. But Sue doesn't live in France entails Sue doesn't live in Paris, right? But in fact, you know, impossible, of course, works in the same way, right? So if I say it's impossible that Sue lives in France, then this entails that it's impossible that Sue lives in Paris. You know, impossible has a negative morpheme. You might think, you know, maybe, you know, but even it's prohibited to visit France entails that it's prohibited to visit Paris. And then the contrast between a few and few that we had a moment ago. So seeing a dog entails seeing an animal, right? And a few people saw a dog entailed a few people saw an animal, right? So a few is not entailment reversing, but few is, right? So if few people saw an animal, then few people saw a dog. So now you go from animal to dog, so you have this reversion of entailment. So this property of contraposition or entailment reversion is found beyond negation, and that's what it means for an element to be actually negative, for an environment to be negative. It means you're in an environment in which the direction of entailment is switched from what it would be in the most simple case, right? And so the correct generalization is basically that this complex disjunction, soit-soit, does not want to be in an entailment-reversing environment, a negative environment for short. Now you could ask, you could try to go further, and you might find amazing that this would work. I did one negation, two negations, why not three negations? Right? So I did that, actually. So I'm going to simply read the translations in English, what these sentences are with or. And you'll see further they are pretty interpretable. So the first one is, I would find it unacceptable for you to vote for Sarkozy or for Hollande. So I have one negation, which is unacceptable. This tells you about when this work was done, which is quite long ago. Two negations. I would find it unacceptable for you not to vote for Sarkozy or for Hollande. I mean, that's pretty interpretable, right? Three negations. I would not find it unacceptable for you not to vote for Sarkozy or for Hollande. It's harder, right? Now, let's look at this graph, and let's just look at the blue bars, because they represent what you see with OU. And what you see is an expected degradation as you pile up negations, right? So three negations is hard to process. That's not very surprising, right? But what's interesting is that if now I replace OU with soi in the sentences, then you get this very surprising pattern, right? So here, you know, I'm manipulating two factors, the number of negation or negative elements, and whether I use the plain disjunction or the complex disjunction. And then you see this quite strange patterns, right? Which is that with one negation, it's not so good. With two negations, it's actually better. And with three negations, again, not so good. So when you see this, I mean, there is clearly two effects which add to each other, right? There is this sort of general degradation when you pile up negation, but then you see this specific pattern, which is soi is bad under one negation, it's good under two negation, it's bad under three negation, which is exactly what you would expect under this semantic, purely logical condition on its distribution. Okay, so how much time do I have now? Okay, so I'll try to wrap up, okay, but there is one more thing I'd like to be able to run you through. So the point is that polarity phenomena in general are generally said, but I wanted to illustrate this with, you know, a specific case. They suggest that our linguistic competence includes, in one way or another, a mechanism that computes the polarity, positive or negative, of an environment, and that this mechanism is implicated in the licensing of these elements. The phenomena is basically observed in many different languages, and maybe, I want to be very cautious, but the global nature of the condition, so, you know, this one, two, three negations, and, you know, that might present a challenge for language models, I would think. So, now, where did the condition come from? And I'm realizing I have only 8 minutes. Oh, okay. So, okay, I'll try to explain. So, you know, we want, as I said, we strive for something explanatory. So I'll try to give you the story in a short, you know, in a shorter way. So there is this fact that we know also introspectively, but it's also, you know, well established, that this complex disjunction across languages, they favor an exclusive reading more so than the plain disjunctions, okay? Here is a theory of how the exclusive reading comes about for the plain disjunction, right, which is certainly possible. The idea that the literal meaning of or is inclusive, but or compete with and, so A or B compete with A and B, and so the idea that the cooperative speaker who would believe A and B would use that competitor, and so under some assumptions, you know, when you hear A or B, you are going to assume A and B is false. So essentially, you are going to, and this is not going to work under negation, right? Under negation, you get actually an inclusive reading. If I say John didn't do A or B, it means he didn't do either, which is the inclusive negation disjunction, and that's expected because in that case, now the target is not A or B. The competitor would be not A and B, but the competitor now is less informative, precisely because negation reverses entailment. So in a more, you know, in sort of a more schematic way, you could imagine that we have some kind of a strengthening operator that's actually generous only, it's very close to that. And when it applies to a sentence with a disjunction, what it returns is the conjunction of the sentence and the negation of its alternative with end. That's what you have here. And the point is that if you do that with... you know, if or is in a negative environment, this actually produces a contradiction, right? So for instance here, I'm trying to say it's not, you know, so if I take this and the negation of that, I guess it's not the case that A or B, but A and B, and that's a contradiction, right? And so the idea to cut a story short is that, you know, what is special about Soit-Soit is that it very much wants to be targeted by this operation, right? So, and these things basically is going to be to explain two things: why you get this strong tendency to have an exclusive interpretation, but also why it doesn't like to be under negation, right? Because under negation, this operation produces a contradiction, right? Depending on the theory, is either it produces a contradiction or it produces nothing, and you don't like that either. It really depends on the detail of the theory. So that's the story I want to tell. And I think I will have to, now I have like something like 3 minutes. So, you know, I wanted to talk about, you know, something that I find quite interesting, which is, maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll take 5 minutes, okay? So, there is a prediction that we can generate, which is surprising and interesting. So there are these very special verbs like know, which are effective because they presuppose the truth of their complement. The important thing is that under negation, the truth of the complement is still entailed. Philippe talked about that, right? So Gloria doesn't know that it's raining, more or less means it is raining, and Gloria does not believe that. Now, the point I want to make is that this means that the context does not know is not truly negative, right? Because, you know, very intuitively, there is a positive part in the meaning, right? So let's just go with this. And so there is an expectation, which is that soit-soit is going to be okay in this context, right? So here is a contrast. So Samira's parents do not believe that she plans to enroll soit in medicine, soit in biology. That is supposed to be bad. I put soit-soit in the context, not believe. But if I replace believe with savoir, with know, it should improve. So that's in French. Les parents de Samira ne savent pas qu'elle prévoit de s'inscrire soit en médecine, soit en biologie. Samira's parents do not know that she plans to enroll soit in medicine, soit in biology. And that's what we find here, right? So same case, same survey, right? So under ne croit pas and under ne sait pas, ou, so don't believe, don't know, ou is fine in both cases, as we expect. Soit is bad under do not believe, and it's good, basically, under do not know, right? What I find interesting here, that's really a prediction, it's a prediction of the theory. You put different things together, we have this factive verb that we know about, you put all that together, you get that. So we really have a transparent deductive theory. And maybe that will be my conclusion, that we can build such theories in semantics using the tools of logic. And so there is, you know, there is an explanatory gain in doing that. And I think that, you know, the question I'd like to ask is, you know, could we, I mean, certainly we know that all of this is implemented in our brain, starting from neurons, from something that is not symbolic. But this, to me, is a central challenge in a way. So to how do we grow this, sort of, you know, this apparently symbolic abilities from, for instance, neural networks? That would be my conclusion. Right, so it's here. And maybe anticipating on the one of the next talks by Stan, maybe we need to posit at some level something like a language of thought, if we take these data seriously. Okay, thank you.